Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, December 5th, 2022. My goodness, it's December. Mm. And we'll be broadcast on Wednesday, December 7th, 2022 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Yep.
We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Here's a reminder for you. The Mansfield Historical Society is at 954 Stores Road in Stores, Connecticut. You can check out their Facebook page and website. They're open 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. this time of year, and you can follow them on Facebook for scheduled events. Last Friday, they had a Zoom presentation on the Mills of Mansfield Hollow, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. This is a great resource to learn about the indigenous people of our town. You can research your own town's historical society to find out more about the indigenous people in your area. So the next thing I wanted to put out there is today is the 5th of December, so we're into the Sagittarius season. Yay, fellow Sagges. My birthday was last Monday, so I made some shows in advance so I could take some time off and relax. And today I'm back to my Monday schedule, which we will be for a little while until we go visit Mom in January, and then we'll be off for a week, and that's it. And then we'll be here right along for you. Broadcasting Facebook Live on Mondays, and then of course you'll hear us on WHUS and all of the places where you can listen to us on podcast. Anyway, today is the 5th of December, so shout out to my friend Cassandra Forsyth, Cass Forsyth, who I've been associated with for many years, for a good 10-15 years, and she's a brilliant young woman, and she has a PhD in, I believe, nutrition, and she's a formidable athlete. She used to do power lifting, and now she is a very strong yogini and does very impressive yoga, and she is a PhD, and she's over at she's teaching over at Central Connecticut State University. So I hope she has a wonderful day today, and I just always think of her on this day because I have a thing about dates. I have a memory for dates and things that happen on particular dates. With that in mind, yesterday is the 4th of December, and so in the Gregorian calendar, December 4th, 46 years ago, is the day I became bat mitzvah. And 1 year ago was the day that my nephew Tali became bar mitzvah. And so on this day, a year ago, we were in New Jersey celebrating Tali's bar mitzvah. And Tali's Gregorian birthday is, in fact, December 4th. So that was yesterday. So happy birthday, Tali. Sent him a present. We Facebook messengered, and that was nice. Had a little virtual party for him, and that was kind of cool. And his favorite color is pink. Go Tali. So I sent him a pink plaid hoodie, which was really cool. And my nephew Harry, his older brother, has gotten into baking, and he made a pink cheesecake. So cool. I hope he does that for me someday. I think that's just the coolest. Although mine would probably have to be a vegan cheesecake. And if you're thinking, what in the heck is a vegan cheesecake? Let me tell you, vegan cheesecake can be delicious. It's not technically cheese, but you can make cheesecake out of cashew cream, and you can use vegan ingredients for the crust, like dates and walnuts, and you could use a little bit of gluten-free flour if you wanted to. And they make a mean one over at Not Only Juice in Willimantic. And you can also buy brands of refrigerated vegan cheesecake at the health food store. There are a couple of brands that you can get, and they're quite good, you know. And what I'm looking for is that creamy texture, and cashews do a really nice job with creamy texture. I'm very impressed. So if you're looking for making something with cream in it, cashew cream is very easy to make, and it's delicious. It has lots of sweet notes, so you don't have to sweeten it too much or at all if you don't want to. And then you can make it into cream. You can whip it, and you can use it for cream and creamy fillings and thicken it up a little bit and make it into cheese, you know, fake cheesecake. And it's amazing. You can also get vegan cheese style food made from cashew cream that's flavored in a savory way, and that can be a nice substitute for cheese. And they have some really nice stuff over at Divine Treasures in Manchester. So these are things you can try if you want to, and because I'm mostly not eating dairy. Again, I do find that I'm okay with butter. I really don't seem to have a problem with butter. I'm also wondering if I'm okay with a little bit of dairy now, that my issue with dairy more had to do with my healing process and that I'm better with it now, but I'm nervous to try it, so I haven't yet. But butter seems to be no problem. Put butter on muffins and things. And oh my goodness, the baked goods. There's so much baked goods happening. And our farmer's market now has baked goods, has more baked goods this time of year, and baked goods that I can eat. One of my favorite bakeries finally started making a gluten-free scone. I'm so excited. And I have to be careful and not eat a lot of it all at once, or else, there's going to be two of me. So what I wanted to do, so in that vein, today is the 5th of December, so we're 20 days to Christmas. Well, we're going to have a quiet Christmas this year because our families are away. Christmas and Hanukkah will converge. So because Hanukkah starts on December 18th, so we'll be lighting Hanukkah candles on Christmas, and I don't have to ask anybody if it's okay if I light Hanukkah candles at their Christmas gathering, because our Christmas gathering will be here. And so is it okay if I light Hanukkah candles on Christmas?
Yeah.
How about Christmas Eve?
Okay.
Want to play dreidel?
Okay.
Okay. We'll play dreidel. Yeah. Okay.
Why do you ask?
Because, usually it's polite to ask if you're going to a Christmas gathering, can I do Hanukkah stuff at your Christmas gathering? It's polite to ask.
Oh.
So I'm just asking.
Well, our Christmas gathering is going to be us.
Right. We don't know. Maybe we'll get somebody else in on it. Maybe someone will come over.
I'm not sure. Well, you know what? I'm not sure if Greg will still be here or not. I think he's going out to Donnie's.
Yeah, for Christmas. That's right.
So I think it's just us. And my sister is going away.
Colorado.
They're going to Mexico.
That's right. They're going to Mexico.
With her son and
daughter-in-law. We are going to have a Christmas guest. The Christmas guest has four legs and fur.
Oh, right. We have a dog. Yeah,
we're going to have a
dog sitting.
We're going to have a Neff dog.
Right.
Our Neff dog is going to be coming. What's our Neff dog's name?
Uba.
Uba? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. Uba.
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 Oh, my God. You realize that's practically Shabu backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did they name the dog
Uba? Or Ube, or maybe Ube. Maybe it's Ube. I can't remember. It's something like that. It might be Ube.
All right. So we'll
that's it.
So we'll have to find out. Okay. And then one more thing is that tomorrow is my Hebrew birthday. So I was born on the 12th of Kislev, and the 12th of Kislev is tomorrow. So that means that my Hebrew birthday starts tonight.
Okay.
Cool.
That's nice, dear.
So I need it. We need a cupcake and a candle. All right. So that'll be fun. Okay. All right. So let's talk about, now that we're talking about cupcakes and candles, let's talk about the very important topic of added sugars, since we tend to eat them, more of them this time of year. And so here I am talking about celebrating, baked goods and things like that. And so now we're going to talk about why it's a good idea to cut down on them. So depressing, right? So there are seven health benefits of cutting down on added sugars. So, the U.S. Department of Agriculture recommends that you limit added sugars to less than 10% of your daily calories. And the American Heart Association recommends no more than 6 teaspoons, which is 100 calories of added sugar for women, and 9 for men, which is 150 calories. And we probably eat more than that, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
So that's added sugars. That doesn't count your sugars that are in your milk or in your fruit, because with milk and fruit, with milk, you have some protection from the proteins and the fat in the milk for digesting the milk sugar, the lactose that's in the milk. And the same with fruit. You have antioxidants and bioflavonoids and fiber to help you to slow down the processing of that sugar. So when you eat added sugars, your body absorbs them quickly and can't process them fast enough. They're used in sweetening foods and beverages like soda, or in your coffee or your tea. Although I personally prefer, in tea, I like honey. Especially in hot tea, I prefer honey. In iced tea, I do like a little bit of sugar. Too much sugar, of course, can put you at greater risk for heart disease, liver disease, obesity, diabetes, other health conditions. So one of the things that will happen if you eat less sugar is it'll help to regulate your blood sugar. Now, there's a shock. So what happens is if you eat too much sugar, you can become insulin resistant. So when you have too much sugar, the pancreas releases a lot of insulin at once to keep up. And if you have too much insulin around, your body is going to eventually become insulin resistant, that because your body just can't process the insulin. It can't bind all the insulin that's around. There's just no room for it. And insulin will go, if it can't bind to your cells to open the door to let sugar in, then insulin is going to bind to other receptors to do other things that maybe you don't want it to do. Because insulin is not only for sticking to your cells and opening up the doorways to let sugar in. Insulin is also also pushes for growth. It increases growth hormone. So it's going to increase insulin like growth factor coming from other parts of your body. It's going to it's going to shuttle sugar into a pathway to turn it into fat. So it increases your triglycerides. And then if you have too many triglycerides around and they're floating in your bloodstream, the insulin's going to look at it and go, all right, I'm going to bond to your fat cells and I'm going to open the door so you can get more fat into your fat cells. So if you're not using it to process the sugar that you ate, you're going to be using it to get fatter. That is one of the things you're going to do. And you're also going to be using it to get more inflamed because insulin pushes inflammatory compounds. If you have too much insulin around, all you people, I have so many, mostly young people, but not always, who come into me and they have a problem with acne. And if you have too much sugar around, you're going to have too much insulin around, and insulin pushes the release of androgens. And androgens push the production of sebum, the oil in your gland, the oil in your sebaceous cells, and you produce more oil, and bacteria goes after that oil, and then you get zits, you get pimples. Mm. So too much insulin will give you zits. So, you know, remember how they said, it's not proven that chocolate increases acne. Well, it's not really chocolate, it's the sugar. Unless you have an allergy to chocolate, then it might be the chocolate. But most of the time, it's some kind of food that's increasing your insulin. That's what's going on. And sugar can do that. And dairy can do that because the proteins in dairy increase insulin. And that's about dairy protein. The casein and whey increase insulin because dairy's job is to turn little babies into great big people, or cows or goats or opossums or what have you, whatever rodent you have or whatever mammal you happen to be. So if you eat less sugar and you eat more protein, resistant starch like in your tubers, your sweet potatoes and squash and your cassava, then you may be able to lower your insulin levels, and the less insulin. So insulin, you will die without insulin. That's why people with type 1 diabetes are at risk unless they take insulin. So, but if you make insulin, you want to be judicious with your insulin. You don't want to have too much insulin around. So the fastest way to raise your insulin is to eat too much refined starch and sugar. So looking at eating less of that is a good idea. Again, if you eat less starch and sugar, you're going to have a lower weight. There's a shock. Mm. So if you stay below the recommended daily amounts for sugar, you're unlikely to cause weight gain. So what did we say? That was 150 calories of added sugars for men and 100 calories of added sugars for women, 6 teaspoons for women and 9 teaspoons for men. So if you stay away, if you mostly stay away from foods with added sugar in them, your weight's going to be lower. So if you do nothing else to change your weight, that's something you could do. You could take out foods with added sugar in them, and then your weight might go down. Diets that are high in sugar are linked to fat around your belly, especially your visceral fat. And the visceral fat can wrap around your abdominal organs, which is linked to chronic disease like diabetes and heart disease. So you want to limit sugar-sweetened foods and beverages. So sparkling water has no sugar in it. Fruit is okay unless you're eating a ton of it. I mean, if you're eating you know, 3 or 4 servings of fruit a day, or, you know, 2 to 3, depending on the time of year and what your preferences are. You know, 2 or 3 servings of fruit is not going to be a big deal. So that would be like maybe a clementine with your breakfast, or some berries in your oatmeal, maybe an apple later on, and maybe some fruit later in the day as a snack. So sugar is bad for your teeth.
Yeah.
That's a shock, right?
That's a shock.
Yeah. So
are genetics.
Genetics are bad for your teeth too. Mm-hmm. But sugar likes to eat the bacteria in your mouth, and it likes to make plaque. And so you have this bacteria, Streptococcus mutans, that lives in your mouth, and it will multiply more rapidly if it has sugar to eat. And it can inflame your gums. Sugar can inflame your gums. Well, the plaque inflames your gums, and then you have inflamed gums. And the thing with inflamed gums is now you have blood vessels, lots of blood vessels in your mouth. And if the gums become friable, that means that they can break apart. You have bacteria in your mouth. You have the strep mutans in your mouth, and you have whatever you're eating has some level of bacteria in it, and it can get into your bloodstream. And guess what that can cause?
Diabetes?
Cardiovascular disease. Yes, because the bacteria, there's a relationship between dental caries and cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's because, again, because bacteria that grow in your mouth can get into your bloodstream from your friable gums, and then it's in your bloodstream, and it can hang out in areas where it's hard to get out of, like skinny little coronary arteries, and also your heart valves. That's less common, but so you can theoretically get endocarditis from eating too much sugar. That's unusual. That's not something you usually see. Endocarditis, people tend to be predisposed to that. But cardiovascular disease is super common in people with coronary artery disease, where they have blockages in the coronary arteries. Really common in this country.
I know
that. And part of why people have that is eating too much sugar.
Mm.
Eating too much sugar, bad for your liver. There's a shock. All right. So what happens when you eat too much sugar? You can get non-alcoholic fatty liver disease because carbohydrates are processed in your liver. And once again, that if you can't get the sugar into the cells for use, for energy, your body's going to store them. And one of the places that it's processed and stored is your liver. And what can happen is if you're spending too much time eating too much sugar, especially if you're eating fructose, and if the fructose is coming, it's not coming from fruit. Fructose in fruit is pretty harmless unless you're eating 80 apples a day. I mean, unless you're eating ridiculous amounts of fruit and fruit juice. But if you're having, you know, like I said, if you're having berries in your oatmeal, you're having an apple at lunch, and you're having a few grapes as a snack in the afternoon, that's not a big deal. But unless you are super sensitive to fruit. And there are people like that, you know, people who have to eat the ketogenic diet and they can barely eat any fruit at all. There are people like that. And fruit in general is not going to give you, the only sugar you ate was fruit, you're probably not getting fatty liver disease. Fatty liver disease happens from refined starch and refined sugar. Fatty liver technically will happen from alcohol. But non-alcoholic fatty liver disease means that you're drinking below a certain threshold. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease generally comes from eating too much starch and sugar. So fructose, when it reaches your liver, fructose doesn't need insulin to be processed. And where you get unopposed fructose is usually in soft drinks. So it's going to be in your commercially produced sodas. And so that's probably the worst thing you can drink. That's the thing that's going to give you the fatty liver disease. And you'll see that more often in places where it's really hot. You'll see, you see obesity at higher levels in southern states. And part of the reason for that is it's more refined sugar. And it's also because it's hot down there. And they're not always drinking just water to quench their thirst. They're drinking, you know, enormous sodas are, I will admit that having a soda on a hot day is really refreshing. And, you know, I will have a soda now and again, but like when I drink soda, I drink a half a cup of it and then I don't drink it again for a couple of days. And if I'm on a place where I'm craving fizzy, I'm going to be doing sparkling water. And, you know, I'll have a fizzy water most days. This time of year, I'm not as interested in it because fizzy water is very refreshing and it cools you off. I don't want things to cool me off right now. Right now, I just want to hydrate with water and maybe some tea and maybe a little bit of coffee. But mostly, you know, warm tea is very nice this time of year. Eating unopposed, consuming unopposed fructose, and the main place you're going to find the unopposed fructose is in soda. And unopposed fructose can give you fatty liver disease. All right. Cardiovascular health. Like we said, sugar can increase your risk of cardiovascular health, both directly and indirectly. If your diet is greater than 20% of total calories from added sugar, you're going to be more likely to have higher triglycerides. Triglycerides, remember, are the form of fat that sugar takes when it gets into your blood. So you don't have actual sugar running around your bloodstream. It's packaged into triglycerides. Elevated triglycerides increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. Why? Because triglycerides that are in your bloodstream, the triglycerides that are in your bloodstream can easily be oxidized. And oxidation, because they're running around your bloodstream, anything else in your bloodstream, you know, there's metabolism that can be happening. And when the triglycerides get oxidized, they're more likely to hit the inside of your arteries and damage them. And when you have damaged arteries, then your body goes to repair them. And what does it repair them with? Platelets, cholesterol, and calcium. And if you have too much of that going on in the skinny little coronary, remember the coronary arteries are the width of a piece of spaghetti. I'm not even sure if it's a piece of cooked or raw spaghetti, but they're very skinny. So you get enough of that plaque, it's easy to block them. You know, you think about how thin those things are. That's why you want to have lots of HDL and not very much LDL, and you don't want things to be oxidized. So you can keep those pipes clear. All right, so there was a study that examined daily added sugar consumption and heart disease risk in over 11,000 people over 15 years. And people who ate over 25% or more of their daily calories from sugar were more than twice as likely to die from heart disease compared to those who died from less than 10%. Even if you're at a healthy weight, reducing your intake of sugar can help your blood pressure, cholesterol, and triglycerides. Who knew that?
So how do you do that? If you're so, like, if you're really, really addicted to sugar and you really, really like your sugar a lot and you like your sweet things, how do you reduce your intake of sugar?
So hold on a second.
Okay, first, are we getting there?
First of all, I have a couple more things that reducing your sugar can help. And we have Andrew chiming in. So hello, Andrew. Thanks for listening. He wants to know why you see those big bellies on guys who drink a lot. Yes, that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. So drinking alcohol, alcohol is technically not sugar, but alcohol does have a lot of calories in it. And alcohol converts to acetyl-CoA. And I am imagining that at some point it converts to glucose. And that's part of why that happens. So you're seeing big bellies on people who drink a lot because what you usually see is the beer gut. You don't necessarily see it in people who drink other kinds of spirits, but when you drink beer, because beer has carbohydrates in it. And if you're drinking a lot of beer, it's going to have a lot of actual carbohydrate aside from the alcohol in it. So alcohol has a lot of calories, but the other piece about alcohol is that alcohol is converted easily to something called acetyl-CoA. And acetyl-CoA is something that your electron transport chain can very easily use for energy. So it makes your metabolism lazy. And that's the whole point with sugar also, that it makes your metabolism lazy. Like if you want to burn fat, it's going to be harder to burn fat the more sugar you eat, because if you're dumping sugar into your body, you're going to have a higher blood glucose level, and your body's going to see that blood glucose and it's going to use that for energy, and it's going to not dip into your fat stores. And then if you're overeating the sugar, then you're going to store the excess as fat. That's how that works. So the less sugar and refined, I mean, if you're not doing anything else, I mean, there's all these diets that you can do. You can do low carb diets. You can do ketogenic diets. You can do the Mediterranean diet. You can do, you know, the vegan diet, paleo diet. If you do nothing else, it might just be a good idea to reduce refined sugar and refined starch. And just start there. Even if you're having, say, oatmeal for breakfast and you're having sandwiches for lunch, maybe when you have your sandwich, have more meat and vegetables and less bread. Like have only one piece of bread, but increase the amount of meat and vegetables. Or instead of having bread, have a slow carb in there. Have some plantain or sweet potato or squash or cassava root in a little dish, and then all the things you would have put in the sandwich, like your turkey breast, your chicken breast, maybe even a little piece of healthy of uncured bacon, and some lettuce and tomato, and season it with whatever you like. Maybe you would like to season it with oil and vinegar, or maybe you'd like to put on mustard, and have it and eat it with a fork, and you have a sandwich, a breadless sandwich, and it can have a little starch in it, and it'd be much better for you to have a slow carb. Another example of a slow carb might be a pseudo grain like quinoa or amaranth or buckwheat. I know that sounds weird, but it's going to be healthier for you than having that sandwich with all that bread. Or if you like bread, have one slice and have more of the meat, you know, so have a keep your bread under 70 calories and make sure it's whole grain. And it's a sourdough whole grain or it's gluten free, and you're gonna do better glucose wise with that. So skin health, too much sugar will affect your skin and can give you acne. We talked about that before because of the release of insulin like hormones that trigger skin related changes. And I told you this already that you increase more androgens like testosterone, and testosterone pushes the production of sebum. And when you push the sebum, then the actinobacter on your skin goes yum yum yum, starts eating the sebum, and your immune system goes no, you can't be there, starts munching on it, and now you get zits. That's what happens. So when you eat, the other thing about your skin is that when you eat too much sugar, it glycates your skin cell, the protein in your skin cells. So protein is supposed to be nice and soft and supple and smooth, and when you eat too much sugar, the sugar will attach to the protein in your skin cells and give you wrinkles. So reducing sugar can't reverse wrinkles, but it can slow the, it might help you to get less of them. So if you already have wrinkles, that's when, you can do things like, there's all kinds of, you know, fancy treatments you can do. Like you can get collagen injections, you can get hyaluronic acid injections. My preference is to topically apply creams. I enjoy health and beauty aid products. I admit it right here. I enjoy smelly stuff and I enjoy putting on lotion, especially on my face. And I'm a lotion fan. So I have lotions. I try to always have a lotion that I put on at least a few times a week that has hyaluronic acid in it. And so, I mean, that's probably part of why I have decent skin for my advanced age. Some of it is genetics, the long telomeres and like that, but some of it is because, you know, I use a nice cream. So you can get depressed if you eat too much sugar. It affects how your brain functions. It's very simple. There's a simple reason for that. One of the reasons is that when you eat sugar, sugar requires B vitamins and magnesium to process it. And you need those things to process your neurotransmitters. And so if those are not as available, you can't process your serotonin and your dopamine and your norepinephrine as easily. And so also when you eat too much sugar, eating too much sugar is addictive. Because it kicks up in the short term, it does kick up your endorphins and your dopamine that make you feel good in the moment, but it jacks them up too high and then it drops them too quickly. So some studies show that there's a relationship between depression and eating too much sugar, and some show there is not. I certainly see in my practice when people are overeating starch and sugar, I see mood issues, and I see energy issues, that people are more tired when they eat too much starch and sugar. So eating less starch and sugar can support a healthy weight, good skin, good liver health, good immunity, all kinds of, and good cardiovascular health. So it's really a good idea to do. All right. So now you asked me, how do we cut down on some added sugars? That was your question, right?
Hmm.
Yep.
Exactly.
So, okay. So So one of the, so there's a lot of things you can do. The first thing you do is you have some water because you're thirsty.
Mm. Water's good. Mm-hmm.
This is plain water. That's what I'm drinking right now. Just a little bit of plain water. It's not even that cold. And best thing you can drink. And then, like, if you need electrolyte, I mean, if you're sweating, if you're doing sweaty exercise and you want to have some electrolytes in the water, I think that's fine. But that plain old water is the really the best thing you can drink. It's the most hydrating thing you can drink. Although some would argue that it's better if you'll get hydrated faster if there's a little electrolyte in the water. But anyway, if you're not in the process of exercising, it's probably the best thing to drink. Okay, so how do you cut down on your added sugars? Well, the first thing you can do is figure out how many calories you're getting from added sugars. The USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, has a super tracker that can help you figure out how much added sugar you're consuming. And so it's something that you can go to. It's a website you can go to, and you can input the foods that you're eating, and that can help you to see. And then there are all kinds of food trackers, and there are free versions and there are paid versions. One of the ones I like to use is MyFitnessPal, and there's also Lose It and WW and Noom. There's many trackers you can use, and most of them have a free version, and they're both apps and websites that you can use, and they will help you to figure out how much added sugar you're eating. And then you can see it in front of you, and then you can see that they'll show you which foods have the added sugars in them, and then you can figure out which foods you want to cut back on. So then some shifts that you can do. So instead of eating sweets all the time, have fruit instead of cookies and cakes and stuff. If you're eating cereals that are sugary, swap it out for cereals that have no sugar in them, like have some oatmeal, and you do not have to put sweetener in your oatmeal. Having said that, if you have oatmeal and you put a teaspoon of maple syrup in your oatmeal, that's only one teaspoon. And it, you know, you've got, if you're a guy, you've got eight more. And if you're a woman, you've got five more teaspoons of sugar to do in the day. So one teaspoon of maple syrup is going to be fine. Or one teaspoon of honey, if you like honey better. And maple syrup or honey is going to be better for you than refined sugar because it's going to have some flavonoids and nutrients in them. And, you know, you can put that in your oatmeal. Or you can skip the sweetener. It's really legal. You can have oatmeal with no sweetener in it. It's really okay. And especially you can throw fruit in it. The fruit doesn't count. And then the other thing that makes your oatmeal sweet is cinnamon. And cinnamon is actually good. You can see me shaking my cinnamon, right? Cinnamon is really good for your blood sugar. It helps to regulate blood sugar, and it makes things taste sweeter. So, and I find that if I put cinnamon in my coffee, I don't need as much sweetener in it. And you might find that with your oatmeal, that maybe fruit and cinnamon is going to be enough to make your oatmeal taste sweet. And the cinnamon actually is beneficial for your health in terms of blood sugar. And of course, avoid soda, you know, drink water, you can drink dairy products or unsweetened dairy products if you or unsweetened, dairy substitutes if you want to. And also if you do want to have sweets, see if you can have smaller portions. So you keep under that, 6 to 9 added teaspoons of sugar in a day. If you have a soda, have the 4 ounces. Don't have a 16 ounce or a 24 ounce soda. Cut the amount of sugar or sweetener that you add to your coffee. And again, like I said, with coffee, if you like the taste of cinnamon, add cinnamon first and then add the sugar, and you might find that you don't need to add as much sugar. So then the other thing to do is you look for sugar in the ingredients list that you should check labels. So if you're eating a processed food, see if there's been sugar added to it, and find out how much added sugar there is in the product. There's going to be less likely to be sugar in a packaged meat product. You want to check if you're buying crackers, you want to make sure they're whole grain and don't have sugar added to them, or a chip or something like that. And remember that sugar can go by a lot of different names, so be aware of those. It could say corn sweetener, it could say high fructose corn syrup, it could say dextrose, fructose, glucose, it could say brown sugar, molasses, invert sugar, lactose, malt syrup, trehalose, turbinado, sucrose, raw sugar, all of, or sucanat or evaporated cane juice or coconut sugar. These are all different names for sugar. So check the ingredients. Those are still added sugars. And they may be in foods you don't expect, like in what you think of as savory foods. So it could be in your frozen pizza that you buy. It could be in pasta sauce. It could be in crackers. It could be in chips. Things that you think of as savory might actually have sugar in them. Even your hummus. So if you're buying a processed food and you're concerned about sugars, you want to check the labels. So here's some items that can have sugar in them. So a tablespoon of ketchup can have 12 calories of added sugar. A flavored yogurt, 6 ounces of flavored yogurt can have 72 calories of added sugar. That's most of your allotment for the day. A cup of flavored cereal can have 48 calories of added sugar. A chocolate bar can have 74 calories of added sugar. A sports drink can have a lot, 122 calories, and you're almost done for the day. A piece of chocolate cake, and a can of regular soda, you're over. You're over and beyond because they're over 100. A piece of chocolate cake, you're going to be, for men and women, you're going to be beyond. And Andrew mentions that beware of health smoothies, that they can have added sugars too. And so artificial sweeteners, saccharin, aspartame, acesulfame, potassium, and sucralose can help you cut down on calories, but they may not help you maintain your weight in the long run because they fool your body into thinking they're getting sugar, and you can ultimately raise your insulin. So those are some ways to cut down on sugar. The bottom line is basically don't eat it and find substitutes for it and do things to help yourself crave it less, like get exercise and eat more protein. And so here's some beliefs around sugar. So we should unlearn some things about sugar, that all sugar is bad sugar. And so that's not necessarily true, that added sugar is going to be problematic. But whole fruit and dairy, if you're not dairy intolerant and you can digest lactose, you're going to be okay with those things. Minimally processed or natural sugars are better for you. Well, I think they're a little bit better for you, but if you eat too much of them, you still have to think of honey and maple syrup as added sugar. I think they're better for you than refined white sugar because they do have flavonoids and they do have antioxidants in them, but you still should think of them as part of your added sugar allotment for the day. And I feel like if you're having oatmeal and the oatmeal has no sugar in it at all, and you put 1 teaspoon of maple syrup in it, that's better for you than if you put 1 teaspoon of white sugar in it. Likewise, if you put raw local honey in it, that's going to be better for you than if you put added sugar in it. So if the only sugar you had, like if you didn't eat any sweets through the day, and then you had a teaspoon of honey in your tea and a teaspoon of maple syrup in your oatmeal, and that's the only added sugar you had in the day, I think that's great. That's helpful, unless you're really, really sensitive to sugar, because not everybody does well with sugar. A myth is that you should cut out sugar from your life completely. Again, you don't have to. If you know, it depends. Obviously, it depends on the person. Some people can't eat any at all. Some people feel like they're addicted to it and they have just a tiny bit and off they go. But again, the recommendation is 100 calories of added sugar for women and 150 for men, which adds up to 6 teaspoons and 9 teaspoons. And so if you keep below that, you're probably going to be at a healthier weight. So on the other hand, the idea is that it's impossible to avoid sugar. No, it's not impossible to avoid sugar. Why would it be impossible to avoid sugar? one way to get into that 100 calories for women and 150 calories for men of added sugar is to have smaller portions. Don't eat the whole container of ice cream. Have a little serving. Those are things to think about, that you could have a bite of chocolate instead of the whole bar. this piece suggests that sugar makes you sick, that sugar can give you heart disease, Alzheimer's, or cancer. But eating it in moderation isn't going to shave years off your life. So again, if you if there was a study in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition that showed that, and it was in over 350,000 adults, they found that added sugar consumption wasn't linked to an increased risk for death as long as you don't overdo it. So again, the less you eat, the better off you're going to be. You don't have to avoid it completely, but the less you eat, the better off you're going to be. Now, Andrew asks if refined sugar is a precursor to cancer. So how could that be? So the answer is yes and no. Again, if you're keeping your sugar at a low level, and so if you're, you know, doing what they're saying to do, which is 100 calories of added sugar if you're a woman, 150 calories if you're a man, and in the context of that, you're eating a very healthy diet that includes a variety of variously colored fruits and vegetables, healthy, clean animal protein, raw nuts and seeds, and a minimal amount of whole grains that works for you, and that's how you eat, you're much less likely to get cancer. Can cancer lead to, can be led to by sugar? Well, the idea is that sugar slows down the functioning of white blood cells, and white blood cells are part of your surveillance system that helps to keep you away from cancer. So if they're not working as well, then, and they're slowed down, then you're going to be more likely to get cancer. And then, of course, if you have more insulin, you have more inflammation. When you have more inflammation, you have more tissue damage. Tissue damage includes damage to DNA. And damage to DNA can lead to cancer. So in the long run, I would say that the more sugar you eat over the course of time, yes, it can be problematic. But if you don't eat a lot of sugar and you moderate that by eating a lot of healthy food, then, and you're eating foods like, you know, last night we had this amazing dish that our friend made, and it had, it was sauteed mushrooms that were sauteed in a watery broth that also had a lot of, you know, it had a lot of herbs and spices in it. Along with eggplant. Well, I think the eggplant made it watery. And because it was sautéed, so I don't know if you realize this, that the fact that that eggplant was in with the mushrooms actually made the mushrooms healthier. It made it, because to get the beta-glucan from the mushrooms, when you cook the mushrooms in water, then the beta-glucans are going to come out into the water. So the water from the eggplant made us, it increased the beta-glucans in the mushrooms that we ate. So that was an extremely healthy dish. And so when you're eating stuff like that, you know, sauteed vegetables or soups and broths, healthy protein, lots of antioxidants, then you're much less likely to get cancer, even in the context of eating that bit of sugar that you have. So you have a little bit of dessert and a lot of really healthy food, and then you're going to be less likely to get cancer. You know, if you're having a lot of sugar most days, that's going to make you sicker. But if you are having a little bit of sugar most days, or you're having a dessert twice a week and the rest of the week you're eating healthy food, it's not going to make you sick. So this is interesting. This is something that we talk about a lot. Are you actually addicted to sugar? Is sugar a drug of abuse? Mm-hmm. And some people say yes and some people say no. We know that eating sugar stimulates pathways in the brain that are associated with feeling pleasure and reward. And so that can stimulate feelings that are similar to substance abuse, but that doesn't necessarily make them addictive like drugs. But some people do get a rush when they eat sugary snacks and feel like they need a regular fix. But that's not so much because of addiction as much as it is because the cycling of the insulin cycle, that when you eat refined sugar, it raises your insulin up high quickly, and then your body, and then the insulin pulls the sugar out of your blood, and now you feel hungry because now you have low blood sugar, and so you have to eat more refined sugar, and so then the insulin is going to pull that sugar out of your blood. So you're in this cycle of high and low blood sugar. So that is sort of like an addiction, but it's not, it technically isn't. It's more to do with cycling blood sugar. And But there are still those who debate it that sugar has addictive drug-like properties, because if sugar can increase dopamine and insulin, sugar can increase dopamine and endorphins, then one might say that perhaps it does have some addictive properties. And the other piece is that people who like to eat sugar find it hard to stop. So that's a feature of addiction. And so it's hard to say, because sugar tastes good and we are wired to seek out sugar. We are wired to seek out sweet things in nature. When we were Paleolithic peoples, when we found something that tasted sweet, that was a sign that it was good to eat. But the sweet things that we would find would either be honey that we would find in beehives, or it would be in fruits. And the sign that something was sweet meant it was safe to eat. And then, of course, when you have an apple, you don't eat the apple when it's still green on the tree. You wait till it turns red. So, and what happens when it turns red? The starches are turned into sugars. And that means it's time to eat that food. So when you find refined sugars, you're much more likely to go after them and want to eat them. That we're wired that way. So it's not so is it really an addiction, or is it just how we're wired and we've got the situation where we've found a way to refine it and we've overdone it? So it's a little hard to say. And so this article suggests that it's unlikely that the average person is addicted, because addiction is a serious medical condition based on brain changes that make it difficult for people to stop the use of a drug. And there are those that feel that saying that you're addicted to sugar makes light of actual addiction to dangerous substances like opiates and alcohol and other drugs of addiction. Because, you know, people can consume sugar and basically lead normal lives, you know, that eating sugar isn't necessarily going to make you late for work. Whereas, you know, you can really affect your life by consuming opiates and alcohol and other drugs of addiction. So they're suggesting it's mythical that sugar replacements are a good alternative. So the chemical ones are probably not such a good idea. And artificial sweeteners like aspartame, saccharin, and sucralose are linked to weight gain and also tied to higher risk for high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, heart attacks, and stroke, and metabolic syndromes. So I think it's because that sweet taste, you're still going to raise your insulin, so you're still going to have inflammation. And there are some people who consume so much of this stuff that, because they think it's okay because it doesn't have calories, that they wind up still getting into an insulin situation. Remember, more insulin, more inflammation, more damage to tissues, and more possibility for inflammatory conditions like cardiovascular disease and cancer. So going on a low or no sugar diet will help you lose weight. This is a suggestion that this is a myth. And so limiting sugar can help you reach your weight loss goals, but you also have to watch your overall calories, because fat loss happens in an environment of calorie deficit plus hormonal balance. So if you're having the same amount of calories with a no sugar diet versus a diet with sugar in it, that you won't lose weight. That's not entirely true. I mean, if you eat an isocaloric diet, and one has no sugar in it, and one has with all healthy food, and one has sugar in it, you're going to lose more weight on the healthy diet. That's how that goes. But if you're overeating calories in the healthy diet, you're not in hormonal balance, you still won't lose weight. Because remember, fat loss happens in an environment of calorie deficit plus hormonal balance. So if you're not in a calorie deficit, you're not going to lose weight no matter what you're eating. And yet, if you are in a calorie deficit and you're eating all healthy food, you're going to lose more weight than if you're in a calorie deficit and you eat sugar. That, face it, 200 calories of chicken does not behave the same way in your body as 200 calories of donut. That's just the way it goes. All right. So the less sugar you eat, the better off you're going to be. And if you eat no added sugar, you're going to sit at a lower weight than if you eat added sugar. It's just that just makes sense because, again, if you're not eating added sugars, that added sugar makes your metabolism lazy. Your body sees the added sugar and says, hey, there's no reason for me to break anything down in this body to get energy, so I'm going to go after the sugar that you just ate. So why shouldn't I? It's your body is expedient. And so the less added sugar you eat, the more likely your body's going to be to dip into your fat stores. That's just how it is. And if you eat less refined sugar, you're going to have lower insulin. Remember that insulin promotes fat storage. The lower your insulin is, the less fat storage you're going to need to have, and the more likely you are going to be to dip into your fat stores for energy. So sugar's not necessarily helpful for you, but it's not necessarily an evil. It is, sugar is something that if you had no sugar in your body, you would have a very difficult time. Your body, your brain needs glucose to function. And so you don't have to be 100% sugar free to have a happy, healthy life. And you might not want to either because you're not going to be happy. And I find, you know, in my old age that moderation is really the key, that people don't stick to restrictive diets. And if they really enjoy chocolate cake and you tell them you can never have chocolate cake again, they're not going to stick to that, or they're going to binge. That's what they're going to do. If you have, and really moderation is the way to go, to train people to have moderation in all things, and also to take pleasure from things besides sugar, like resting or reading a book or being out in nature or spending time with friends, doing things that are not food for pleasure. And one of the reasons we use food as a pleasurable item in our culture is because we're not happy otherwise, because we're working too hard. We're working too hard and we're not resting enough. We don't have enough leisure time. And the lack of leisure time makes you more likely to want to eat, because eating is easy to do while you're running around or you're doing things that you don't necessarily want to be doing for too many hours. And also, when you have leisure time, you lower your cortisol. You're spending time in lower cortisol. Cortisol causes weight gain, and cortisol puts sugar into your blood. All by itself, it puts sugar into your blood. And what happens when sugar goes into your blood? Insulin. Insulin will take the sugar out of your blood that the cortisol put in, which will make you hungry, which will make you want to eat more. And so stress is part of why we overeat in this culture, because we don't have pleasure in other ways, or it's harder for us to get pleasure in other ways because we're just too busy. So do you have to completely give up sugar forever and ever? Probably not. It depends on the person, but there are ways to eat it and still be happy and healthy, as far as I'm concerned. All right. So here's some natural sweeteners that are actually good for your health. If I can get to this sheet. Here we go. So stevia can be helpful for your health. So these are natural sweeteners. Not everybody likes the way these taste, but if you can get into them, they can be helpful, and they actually have some health benefits. Stevia is very sweet, has virtually no calories, and stevia has been studied to be helpful for lowering blood pressure in people with high blood pressure, and doesn't lower normal blood pressure, and may also be helpful for regulating blood sugar. It actually helps to regulate your blood sugar. So if you have diabetes, you can eat stevia, and it can be helpful. If you eat too much, though, it can affect your microbiome. So if you are having a bit of stevia, you might want to make sure you're getting probiotics on board, whether through eating fermented foods or taking probiotic supplements. Then there's erythritol. Erythritol is large. It's usually extracted from corn. It is found naturally in certain fruits. It tastes a lot like sugar, but it does have a mild aftertaste, and it doesn't spike your blood sugar, nor does it affect blood fats or triglycerides. And it's absorbed in the body by intestines and excreted by your urine unchanged, which means that erythritol can disinfect your urine. It's tolerated better than other sugar alcohols, although any sugar alcohol can cause digestive upset because it's not absorbed well, so it gets into your gut, and then some of the flora in your gut are going to munch on it and make gas for you. So it's going to give you some digestive upset. So erythritol is less likely to cause digestive issues than other sugar alcohols like xylitol. And xylitol, if you eat below a certain level, will probably not give you digestive upset, although some people can't do any sugar alcohols at all. And there was a study that showed that higher blood levels of erythritol were still increased with increased belly fat. So even when you're eating a natural sweetener, again, a natural sweetener that's low caloric can all have, it can have insulin issues. Both erythritol and xylitol are antimicrobial. And they're used in mouthwashes and in toothpastes to kill plaque bacteria because they break down plaque. And xylitol has been studied over and over to help to reduce plaque. And xylitol doesn't raise sugar or insulin levels, but again, it's a sugar alcohol. Sugar alcohols can give you gas, bloating, diarrhea because it gets into your gut unchanged and the gut will eat them. Then there's yacone syrup, which is very interesting. It's harvested from the yacone plant, which is an Andean plant, South America, very high in fructooligosaccharides, so it's full of prebiotic, and which feeds the good bacteria in your digestive system, can help to prevent constipation, and it can cause digestive problems. I bought some yacone syrup and I tried it and I think it did give me digestive upset, so I still got it sitting. It does taste pretty good, so it's something you can try. You can try it in teaspoons. And then there's monk fruit, and monk fruit is very interesting. Monk fruit can also help to regulate blood sugar, also known as Lohang Guo. It's from Southeast Asia. Has no calories and carbs, and again may help support blood sugar management. And it has mangosides, which can help to reduce inflammation. And it's easy to find. You can find it in the supermarket now in packets and powder. You just have to be careful that monk fruit isn't combined with a lot of other sweeteners, which can negate its health effects. So then there are natural substitutes like coconut sugar, molasses, and honey. They may contain somewhat smaller amounts of fructose. So are those sweeteners good for you? I think what we're going to do is we're going to wrap up natural sweeteners, natural caloric sweeteners next week, because we're coming out of this. So what I want to encourage you to do is don't be afraid. Don't think that if you love to eat sugar that you're a failure. You're not. It's December. There's a lot of sweets around. Don't be too hard on yourself. Get more exercise, and try to go through the day eating other foods that are festive and healthful, and maybe change up your diet a little bit this time of year. I know this time of year we eat a little bit less salad and a little more stir fry and a little more soups and stews. So change it up a little bit. Use ingredients in your cooking that can be helpful for regulating blood sugar, like your fruits and vegetables, lots of spices and sweeteners, cinnamon, fenugreek, fennel. All of these things can be helpful for regulating blood sugar. And make sure you eat adequate protein. Have some protein with most meals of the day. And you might crave sugar a little bit less and be a little less inclined to eat it. So we'll talk about... We'll talk about caloric sweeteners next week. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.